I'm Soraya Mia, and welcome back to another episode of Awani Global. Now, access to sufficient and nutritious food is a mounting global problem exacerbated by the global pandemic, climate change, as well as world conflicts. Now, Malaysia is no exception to the growing threat of rising food insecurity. In the 2022 Global Hunger Index, Malaysia scored moderately for hunger, with a small increase in the hunger index of 10.9 in 2014 to 12.5 in 2022. And if Malaysia is unable to ensure equitable access to affordable and nutritious food, it's anticipated that the food security gap will reach 40% within the next 40 years. Now, we will be speaking to Dr. Oleg Barabanov, the Program Director of the Valdai Discussion Club, Academic Director of the Eurasian Studies Institute at MGIMO University, and the Professor of the Russian Academy of Sciences. Thank you so much, Dr. Oleg, for joining in our discussion about food security today. Now, when we talk about food security, we have seen, you know, increase in food insecurity across the globe in recent years. Now, what are the latest updates about food security, according to you?
Well, first of all, it's clear that the global food security is connected to the global warming, to the climate change in general, because these droughts, these less spaces for agriculture, sure that many peoples and many countries could be unfortunately affected. But that's not all. That's quite objective things, but there are many other things. First of all, the global agricultural trade is unfortunately is connected to the monopolization when we'll see many big corporations, mainly the Western ones, the US ones, that are operating in this market. And so the pressure of monopolizations or could provoke the raise of prices and to keeping the prices high. And also the politicization of the sphere is unfortunately quite negative for the moment, because we can see it at the example of Russia, when the sanctions by the United States, by Canada, European Union affected deeply the Russian agricultural sector. And the sanctions try to block the Russian agricultural export, both in grain and fertilizers. And the main victims of such sanctions is not the West, but the developing countries, mainly in Africa and in the Middle East, the key market of the Russian agricultural export, but largely in Asia as well. So this problem of politicization is unfortunately makes its negative impact on the agricultural sector in the world. Soraya.
Yes, Dr. Oleg, definitely food, the conflict in Russia and Ukraine has definitely impacted food security, as you mentioned, in developing countries and in Asia, and I'm sure in Malaysia as well. But as we understand, you know, Russia and Ukraine are both countries that are big producers in the agriculture sector, such as, you know, grain and fertilizers. Now, maybe you can explain more about how sanctions, you know, on Russia impacts global food security, Dr. Oleg.
Well, it's first of all that many countries are afraid of the so-called secondary sanctions because they don't want to sign contracts with the Russian exporters, being afraid that themselves would be the object of the U.S. sanctions as well. And that became this situation provoked that many countries became quite cautious about signing contracts with Russia and continuing their export-import activities with Russia. But also there is a disparity, I would say, between Ukraine and Russia in the sphere. Because when there was the so-called the grain deal a year ago, there were in fact, at least on paper, the possibility for both countries to continue their export activities. And Russia stopped its naval activities in the northwestern sector of the Black Sea to allow the Ukrainian grain to be exported. But all the parallel possibilities for the Russian exports were blocked. And the United Nations and UN General Secretary tried to do something to stimulate Russian exports to stop the sanctions on agricultural sector in Russia, but without any success. And that was the main reason, the main logic for Russia to stop its participation in the grain deal. So Ukraine now is doing its export separately, and they do it by land logistic, by land transporting, but also some sea transporting as well. And there were no cases of military incidents in that sphere. And Russia, step by step, also we try to organize our own export logistic possibilities to our partners. One example is Africa, because the last summer, Russia organized the second Russia-Africa summit, where many African leaders participated, almost all delegations from African countries participated. And one of the key topics of the summit was exactly the continuing of Russian exports, grain and fertilizers exports to the African countries. Russia said as a gesture of goodwill to give some grain exports for six less developed countries of Africa absolutely free of charge, and also to continue our exports to those countries. The same situation is in the Middle East, the same situation now we are discussing in South Asia, in Pakistan, for example. And as to Malaysia, Russia traditionally exports its fertilizers to Malaysia. Now I know that the talks started to prepare contracts for the possible grain exports. We are already exporting millet to Malaysia. Just 2 weeks ago, it's a quite good sign for me. It was a meeting of the bilateral Russian-Malaysian Intergovernmental Commission on Economic Cooperation. It was just the second mission, the second meeting of this commission. The first one was several years ago. And now it's important that we continued our bilateral talks. So the process is going on, Saraya.
Talking about, you know, the grain talks or for the grain trade deal between Russia and Malaysia, what do you expect to see in terms of results? As you mentioned just now, you know, for the meeting 2 weeks ago, the bilateral intergovernmental commission that happened in Kuala Lumpur. Now in Malaysia, we also face, you know, the insecurity of grain as well as rice price. So, what can Malaysians expect from this grain deal? Dr. Oleg.
Yes. First of all, I already said about the fertilizers, millet, possible contracts with grain. What is also important that during that meeting, we discussed the possibilities to enlarge the Russian food exports to Malaysia with halal certificates. So it's quite important thing to make sure for the customers that our food products are halal and corresponds to all the halal certificates. Another thing at the bilateral commission was to promote the working group on trade and industry. They will meet in a few months, I think, and sure they will discuss the future cooperation as well. And another topic, maybe not directly connected to the food security of this bilateral commission now, it was connected to the cooperation in the higher education sphere. And in fact, both delegations now, the Russian one and the Malaysian one, were chaired by the corresponding ministers of higher education. So they discussed the possibilities to enlarge the academic mobility, the student exchange, and so on. But connecting this topic, this larger topic of higher education to the food security, for example, now in my university in Moscow, which is the University of International Relations, preparing diplomats and other staff for international activity, we launched the program of the so-called agricultural attaché in cooperation with one agricultural university in Russia. So we understand that the future of international cooperation is deeply connected to the agricultural sphere. And in that sense, to promote the exchange of students, of lecturers, the academic mobility in the sphere of agricultural higher education would be also very fruitful for me for future cooperation. So more or less, what it was at the bilateral intergovernmental commission now, and also responding to your other questions, what to do about prices and so on. It's very important to me to continue and to strengthen the so-called South-South dialogue, or the dialogue among the countries of the global south, of developing countries, and generally of non-Western countries. And for example, this year we had the South African presidency year at the BRICS organization. And one of the topics discussed there was connected exactly to the food security and the possible mutual cooperation of the Global South and non-Western countries. Another platform could be, to some extent, is G20. Also this year, we had the Indian presidency at the G20, and the Indian government proposed many very interesting initiatives also to cooperation of Global South countries in this sphere. So I'm sure that Malaysia, as an active participant of international cooperation, could make its good contribution to this dialogue and to promote such or similar initiatives. Saraya.
I agree, especially on the point, you know, on higher education, because you have mentioned, you know, international relations interconnected with agriculture. There's definitely a lot of room to explore when it comes to ensuring food security in each country. When we talk about education, agriculture as well, maybe, you know, in terms of biotechnology as an example. But we'll talk about that a little bit more later. Now, a little bit more on the conflict side, you know, a key risk for food prices is the potential escalation of conflict in the Middle East. This could lead to higher oil prices, and it could increase the cost of producing and transporting food and fertilizers. But in your thoughts, how would this further impact food costs around the world, Dr. Oleg?
Sure that the current conflict, the current escalation of the conflict in Gaza is a real tragedy. It's a real humanitarian tragedy. And we can see now all the suffering of the civilian people in Gaza. And for the moment, there is no options for the peaceful dialogue and peaceful peaceful settlement of this conflict. And we can also let me say it, it's also a clear sign of double standards in the international politics. Because in the Russian-Ukrainian conflicts, the United States or the West were blaming Russia for whatever we were doing. But now that they are absolutely silent or almost silent about much larger suffering of the Gaza civilian population. So maybe there is some difference between Israel and Russia, I don't know. But we can see clear double standards. And for sure, it will impact negatively all the economic situation connecting to the food security, because you are absolutely right. The food prices are connected to the oil prices, to the energy prices, and sure that unfortunately we could expect a further raising of food prices, unfortunately, and because also it's in favor of the global corporations who are dealing at the global agricultural market. They are quite happy with high prices, it's for sure. And unfortunately, this combination of politics and corporate monopolies, unfortunately, could keep the prices high, Saraya.
Moving away from, you know, politics in global conflicts, you did mention earlier in our discussion about one of the main factors when it comes to food security is climate change. So in 2022, Valdai Discussion Club has published a report called Climate Change and Food Security, a Recipe for Food Totalitarianism. Please share your findings, and has it worsened in the year 2023?
Yes, exactly. You're quite right. We've published that report. I was among the co-authors of that report, and it was written also in the cooperation with the experts of the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations. So we had the international participation among the co-authors. And we wrote it immediately after the Glasgow summit, the Glasgow conference, about climate change, which was at the end of 2021. And there were two main initiatives adopted at the Glasgow summit. One is connected with methane, because methane provoke much more global warming than the carbon dioxide. And according to scientists, methane may be have 30 up to 30 times more of global warming potential than the carbon dioxide. So the main one of the main topics at the Glasgow conference was how to deal with anthropogenic emissions of methane. And sure, it's a big problem, but the decision taken there was to, at least to my opinion, quite controversial in the exactly in the sense of the food security, because about a quarter of the anthropogenic emissions of methane is connected to the livestock farming, mainly for the beef, but for lambs also, and for some other types of livestock farming. And I think maybe you heard already the ideas to of so-called red meat taxes, to tax especially the beef meat, the lamb meat, to stop the livestock farming and to make the price pressure on the market. But okay, it could be working. It could work in the United Kingdom or Canada. I don't know how the reaction of the civil society there would be. But if we take into consideration the developing countries, and mainly the less developed countries, sure that all this pressure to stop the livestock farming, to stop the production of beef and lamb meat, sure it will provoke more hunger and more poverty. And this is a clear case when the global warming, the fight against global warming, fight against climate change, contradicts at least methods of this fight, contradict to the tasks of and to the ethics, I would say, of the food security.
That's a very interesting point that you highlighted there. You know, the contradiction between efforts to combat climate change, but as well as to ensure food security in the whole world, including in developing nations or in the less developing nations. The latest research shows around 735 million people currently face hunger, compared to 613 million in 2019. Back to, you know, the same topic that you were talking about just now, what are your views on the new normal initiatives to actually curb and eradicate hunger?
Well, let me just quote an example, because 3 years ago, the World Food Program of the United Nations was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. And its director, when receiving the Nobel Prize, made a special Nobel lecture. And the main idea from his lecture was very, very simple, that all rich countries and all rich corporations and billionaires must share their wealth to the poor countries, to the less developed countries. So the answer to this question is very simple, that the rich world, the so-called Golden Billion, the United States and others, must share their wealth for the food security and for other spheres as well. It would be a real sign of justice, the global justice. But if we can see the reality, already in the framework of these climate change conferences in Glasgow and others, there was an obligation for the developed countries to share about $100 billion to the less developed countries to support them exactly in this combat against climate change and not to provoke those negative consequences that I said already. But we can see that, okay, they proclaimed this idea to give 100,000 billions, but almost nothing is happening for now. And we can see the annual meetings of the Conference of Parties for Climate Change, Glasgow, another one was in Egypt, the next one is in United Arab Emirates and so on. And at every conference, the developing countries are raising this question that you must share, dear friends, you must share your wealth to protect the global food security. And nothing is happening, unfortunately. So that's the key problem, that undesire of the developed world of the United States, Canada, EU, UK, to share their wealth taken from, let's say, decades or centuries of colonialism to the less developed countries and to the developing world as well. So that's the problem, Sarai.
That seems like a great way to end the conversation today. Just to wrap it up, I guess sharing is caring, even when it comes to global politics and, you know, in a bigger picture. But that's all the time we have today. Thank you so much. We were speaking to Dr. Oleg Barabanov, the program director of the Valdai Discussion Club and academic director of the Eurasian Studies Institute at MGIMO University and professor of the Russian Academy of Sciences. I'm Soraya Mia, and thank you for watching Awani Global.